This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In 1988, the reigning crime family of Philadelphia and South Jersey was destroyed in a federal racketeering trial. Crime boss Nicky Scarfo and 15 of his associates were convicted and given sentences ranging from 30 to 55 years. My guest, Joseph Salerno, is one of the witnesses whose testimony helped put them away. Salerno was a plumber working in Atlantic City when he got involved with Scarfo, whose organization had penetrated the construction industry in South Jersey. Salerno was the first witness to directly place Scarfo at the scene of a murder. Salerno recounted how in 1979 he was with Scarfo and two of his associates when they executed a contractor because he had previously insulted Scarfo. After the hit, Salerno joined the Federal Witness Protection Program and testified in several cases against Scarfo. The mob put a $200,000 price on Salerno's head after he first testified in 1980. Joseph Salerno has a new book about testifying against the mob and living in the Witness Protection Program. It's called The Plumber, and it's co-authored by Stephen Revell. Salerno is very critical of the Witness Protection Program.
They never did anything for me. All they did for me was just change my name, Social Security number, along with my family, my wife and my three children. And that's basically it. They just leave you, and you bear with it. You have no identification. You have no background. And you have to take a lot of chances and trust people, like if you want to go and get a job. Where'd you work before? Okay, fill out this application. How do you verify your references or employment? They don't help you with anything like that. They just don't do it.
What about the protection part of the Witness Protection Program?
The protection part of it is that basically they change your name and your Social Security number, and you're on your own. If you want to come back to the danger area, you know, that's up to you. You know, if you want to stay put wherever you are and be safe, you know, that's up to you too.
You're in what's called the danger area now because this interview is being recorded in Philadelphia. You're from New Jersey, and it was the Scarfo family, which is the big crime family from the South Jersey, Philadelphia area that that you testified against. What kind of special precautions do you have to take when you come back here?
The only special precautions I have to take is if I'm with a law enforcement official, like the people I'm with today, Atlantic County Prosecutor's Office and the FBI, okay? That's it, and I'm fine. I'm very comfortable with that. Because these people will not dare come near, you know, any law enforcement people. They just won't.
Do you think there's still the $200,000 contract out on you?
Let me put it this way. It's never been canceled, okay? And that's the answer to it. I don't know if it is or if it isn't, but it's never been canceled.
With all the leaders of the crime family behind bars, would there still be people to carry out the contract?
Well, I don't think that anyone would do anything for Nicky Scarfo that's on the outside. But if there's someone who wanted to make a name for themselves, let's say, that I know where Joe Salerno is, I could pinpoint him and, you know, I want to go after him, I want to hurt him, you know. That's what I had to be careful about.
Let's talk about how you got involved with the organized crime in the Philadelphia, South Jersey area. You were working as a plumber. You had your own business. How did you start making connections with organized crime?
Okay. I was a plumber in Brigantine, New Jersey. I had my own business. In the early 70s, I worked for, different contractors, and I worked along with Scarfo Incorporated, which was owned by Nicky Scarfo and his nephew, Philip Leonetti. And I worked side by side with these people for several years, 5, 6, 7 years or whatever. Then it got to be late 70s that I got into financial difficulty. I got a loan from these people. At the time, I did not know where the money came from. Okay, I got it from Philip Leonetti. He wouldn't tell me where it came from at that time. I borrowed $10,000. I paid $250 a week for 13 months, just interest, before the principal part of the loan. I occupied an apartment on Georgia Avenue in Atlantic City, which was owned by Scarfo, Nicky Scarfo, and they also ran Scarfo Incorporated out of that same location. And what started to happen was I started to go out with these people. you know, dinners, whatever. I got very familiar with Scarfo, and he told me some of his deep, dark secrets. Told me that he murdered someone. How he did it, he described it to me. You know, he did it with a knife. He twisted it. Now the guy's dead. Anything we say between me and you, we keep it quiet. Or he'd make a gesture with his hand, gun. Then he'd point to his mouth, keep your mouth shut. Or, you know, we'd do it here, pointing to his forehead and his chest. This is first thing. Second thing is you go to, I approached Philip one day, and I asked Philip, I says, what's your uncle do? You know, what do you guys do? You know, and he said, well, I'll show you. Took out a magazine. And it was the Philadelphia Magazine. He pointed to it, and the title of the chapter in the magazine was Contract Killings, I believe it was. And in the article, in fact, it said that there was a judge murdered, okay, at a certain time, at Helfont, and two other people in this article. And they were indicted for it, and it never went to court. Nobody ever testified against them. So this is what we do. This is what we get away with. And whatever we say between us, we keep it between us. You don't repeat it to anyone, even my uncle or anybody.
Nicky Scarfo asked you if you had any guns.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a hunting rifle and a .32 caliber Colt revolver.
Right.
He has to borrow them, and you gave them to him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any sense of what he wanted them for?
Yes. Let me say this first. At this point in time, if you knew Nicky Scarfo, if you knew him, or even Philip Leonetti at the time.
His nephew.
If they asked you to do something, you better not refuse, because I have three children. They know that, okay? My wife, I got family there, the whole thing. And yes, I know people ask me that question all the time. Why did you give him the guns? Didn't you know who these people were? I had no choice with this guy. I knew if I did not do that, give him those guns, okay, I might have had a problem. He might have killed me.
Well, one of those guns, the Colt revolver, ended up being the murder weapon at the murder that you witnessed.
Right.
The person murdered was Vincent Falcone. Who was he?
He was a cement contractor.
And who were the people there?
Nicky Scarfo, Philip Leonetti, and Lawrence Merlino.
And how did you get to be there with them?
I was invited to a Christmas get-together party. That's where the murder happened. That's when Philip Leonetti shot Vincent Falcone to death.
And how did it happen? You witnessed it.
Nicky Scarfo was there. He told Vincent Falcone to start to make some drinks. He had his back turned. So Vincent starts to make some drinks. And Phillips Leonetti standing beside me. Nicky Scarfo sitting on the couch. And Vincent Falcone's got his back turned, okay, to myself and Philip Leonetti. So Philip Leonetti's about a half a step behind me, standing next to me. Pulls out a gun in a flash, puts it up and back of this guy's head, Vincent Falcone, and pulls off a shot. As the guy's going down to the floor, Vincent Falcone, Philip looks at me, I mean face to face, and tells me he's got the gun by his side, which is my gun, tells me that this guy was a no-good MF, Joe, and he's staring at me. Then Nicky gets up off the couch, puts his arms on my arms, and says, you're one of us now. So Nicky goes up to the body of Vincent Falcone, which is there. The guy's staring. He's completely helpless. And he listens to his chest. Scarfo does. And Scarfo asks Philip for the gun. You know, he says, I think that we should give him another one. And Philip says, I'll do it. So he put the gun up against Vincent's chest and pulled off another shot.
Did you say anything or do anything? What could you do?
All I could do is act as though that it didn't bother me. Because if I showed any fear, Philip would have shot me dead, I could tell. That was my test for these people. They wanted to see. They didn't tell. They lied to me. They didn't tell me they were going to kill Vincent Falcone. They didn't do that. I was the only one in the room. Besides, you know, I mean, the victim, okay, that I didn't know it was going to happen.
So you think they were testing you?
Sure.
For?
Grooming me. Get recruit me into their organization.
What led them to believe that you wanted to get in?
Well, I was living at their place. He was looking for new recruits. Scarfo has a way to, how could I say it? He's got a way to take an individual, okay, and put the fear of the devil in him, okay? And that's the way he is. And once he gets his hooks into you, you don't say no to Scarfo. You don't say no. You don't walk away. There's no way.
So once you've witnessed a murder, what are your choices?
Well, you don't have too many choices. You join these people, which I wasn't. That was out. There's no way I was going to. You can go to the law. Okay, you can tell the law. You could run, which I couldn't run. Very confusing at the time. So I took the road. I talked to the law and told them and testified for this state of New Jersey.
So you witnessed this murder and decided you didn't want to be part of the mafia. How did you get to the police? What did you do first?
Well, I went to my home in Brigantine, and I stayed in my house for 3 days. I wouldn't come out of my house. Of course, I told my wife about it. I mean, it was just, you know, just a shock kind of a thing. You don't know what to do. You think that you, it was your gun, you were there, you helped carry the body out. I'm guilty, too. I'm a murderer, too. This is what you think. But you know, you really didn't want to participate in that. Would anybody ever believe you? That type thing. I mean, it keeps bouncing back and forth. What are you going to do when you don't have an answer? So, sure enough, a few days later, the Atlanta County Prosecutor's Office came to my house and told me that I would be next. They had an informant that told them that Joe Salerno's next to be hit out in the street by the Scarfo group. And I had said they didn't know anything. They didn't say anything about Vincent Falcone, nothing. You know, if I knew anything about that, I had no idea. They just picked this up out in the street. And so I told them I know all about the Falcone thing. I followed them down to the prosecutor's office with my own car. I stayed there 13, 14 hours. They taped me, the rights, all that business, the whole thing. And I agreed to be state witness against Scarfo, Philip Leonetti, and Lawrence Merlino in the Falcone murder.
You have testified against the Scarfo family several times. Mm-hmm. I wonder what it was like for you, those times when you walked into the courtroom and saw him, and these were the only times you'd seen him since the murder.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first time was the Falcone case, which they were acquitted in that case, and I testified. You know, you got the information on that, but it's a terrible feeling, you know, to face that. But it's just something that you have to do. You know, you can't back up on it, you know, and you have to force yourself. The anticipation's worse than really being there.
Well, do you make eye contact, or do you try to not look him in the eye?
The first trial, I, in fact, got the prosecutor, Jeffrey Blitz, made me get up off the stand and walk up to them and point each one of them out, you know, for the jury. That's how we started the case. And it was difficult. I mean, it was a tough thing to do.
Did he have you walk up to them to
identify them?
But it seems like a very dramatic way of doing it. You could have just pointed to them. Mm-hmm. Why did he have you walk up to them like that?
Well, I think it was a good idea because to show them and I guess the defense lawyers, this is my theory, I don't know, first time I was ever asked that, that we can intimidate them just as much as they intimidate us, you know? So that's how it went.
In 1982, your father was shot, and this was allegedly a hit against him in revenge for your having testified against Scarfo. And he got shot through the neck, but he survived.
Yes.
Your family asked you to not testify again after that happened.
Right.
Why do you think they asked you to do that? Out of fear for their own lives?
Sure,
or was there something else there?
Yeah. Yeah, I promised I never would do it again, you know. my father was on his hospital bed, and he told me, he says, son, promise me you'll never do it again. You know, don't ever testify against these people anymore. And I listened to him, and I wanted to keep my promise. And there came a time that a prosecutor in Camden, New Jersey, I won't mention his name, wanted me to testify in a case, Local 54 type thing. And I didn't know very much about it. Anything I heard about it was all hearsay type thing. I refused him. I said I didn't want to do it. So he didn't take that for an answer, and we were going back and forth. So he says, we'll force you to testify. So I says, no, you won't. I says, because you won't find me. So long story short, I had to start running from the marshals, because they're the ones that got the word to go find me. So I was in a predicament that I was running away from the law and running away from Scarfo at the same time, that type of thing. It was a bad, bad situation. So got on the phone. I couldn't run anymore. Couldn't do it. Got on the phone with Joe Corey from the Atlanta County Prosecutor's Office. I was in touch with him all the time for the whole 10 years. I always took his word, the whole thing, and he convinced me to give myself up and don't run anymore, because you can't. It's too hard to do, which it was difficult to do. It was really tough. So I did. We got on the phone with another marshal from Philadelphia, and he promised that everything would be fine. They'd pick me up, and just like the last other times I testified, they would treat me the same way. So we agreed with that. Told them where I was. Two marshals, two cars with marshals in them came to the motel room where I was staying. I had the door open. They came in. They threw me up against the wall. They handcuffed me, shackled me, put me in the car, told me to keep my mouth shut, dumped my clothes all over the room, okay? Took me to jail, put me in jail in population. They took me from there. They arraigned me. And during the arraignment, they were calling my name out, my real name, and I was in population again in a jail cell with a bunch of criminals that were ready to be sentenced. So I didn't
they might have known who you were.
Yeah, sure. There's a contract out on me. I mean, I'm scared now. I'm paranoid, you know, of everything. I finally got to the stand to testify. I wasn't on a stand for 10 minutes. The judge dismissed the case completely. So all that for nothing. I lost my truck. They repossessed my truck. I couldn't pay the payments on my truck. My tools were in the truck. I lost that. And, you know, I mean, I was out in the street.
So after you had decided that you didn't want to testify, and after you testified only under pressure from the authorities, what made you voluntarily decide to testify in 1988 in the trial against the Nicky Scarfo and his crime family?
Well, first of all, I had a vendetta against these people because they made me witness a murder, number one. Number two is they shot my father. And the only way I can get back at these people for what they did and ruin my life and my family is to take a chance on testifying in the 1988 RICO trial.
How did your life change when Scarfo and 15 members of his crime family were actually put behind bars? I mean, was there a change the next day in the amount of freedom that you felt, in the way you felt about yourself and the decisions you'd made?
Well, of course, I'll tell you, you know, I took a chance on testifying. I was not forced by the FBI. I did it willingly. And when I heard the verdict, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was the best thing I heard in 10 years. And I'm sure there was a lot of other people that enjoyed it just as much as I have, because, I mean, it was a terrorist gang out there. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, are probably in peace today that the group's away.
Let me ask you a few questions about your life now, and I don't know how much you could tell us, so you can just tell us whatever's appropriate, you know, that's tellable. Mm-hmm. But you still have a plumbing business?
I have, you know, I have a little truck, tools, and I work myself. You know, I do a little advertisement, you know, no yellow pages, nothing like that, and that's how I make my living.
Does it get easier over time when you've had to establish a new identity a new past for yourself? You know, once you've lived in that new identity for a few years, does it get easier?
No, it never gets easier because you just learn to live with it. You make the best of it. It don't get easier. You know, I want my original name back. I want to be able to come and go as I please. You know, I'd like to, you know, visit my family Christmas, you know, and don't have the problem of looking behind my back all the time. You know, no, it stays the same, you know, but you got to learn to live with it, and you do.
Did you ever think about plastic surgery or anything that would change your appearance and make you unrecognizable?
Well, it would be too obvious. Even if they could change my face, let's say, okay, completely, I still have my voice. I still would, you know, have my same body style, whatever. I mean that would be, you know, that would be something that that I wouldn't really consider changing my whole face. I mean, you know, that wouldn't do me any good. Because if I visited, and I would like to go to Juniper Street, that's where my family lives. And if I was there for a week, people would know who I am just by looking at my back, the way I walk. You know, no, I would never do that. Mm-mm.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us. My guest has been Joseph Salerno, and his new autobiography is titled The Plumber, and it's co-written with Steve Revelle. Salerno is now in the Federal Witness Protection Program. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.